From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market reported as the 23rd day of February, 2023. Happy birthday to my brother Larry. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets in today's USDA Ag Forum Outlook. Working numbers, the supply and demand figures for corn and soybeans were released. Again, those are a working set of numbers, but Matt Bennett will help us decide what they might mean or didn't mean at all to the market. Place. He is with agmarket.net. And then we'll continue our conversation with Roman Horobetz. He is a farmer from Ukraine. We've been talking to him on and off since that nation was invaded by Russia. He lives in the eastern part of Ukraine. And last year, as you may remember, as we had our first discussion with him, there was an air raid taking place over his farm. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast here in the United States. And for South America, we'll do that with Mike Tenura from T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, March corn today settled at $6.16, down 13¾. May at $6.59¼, 15 lower. New crop December just 6½ lower at $5.85½. The March beans at $15.34¼, down 5¼. New crop November at $13.87¾, down 7¾¢. Bean meal up 50¢. Bean oil down 79. Soft red winter wheat. A penny and three quarters higher at $7.38¼. The hard red down 14¼ at $8.61¼. And the live cattle for the day finished at $165.32½, 25 cents higher. Matt Bennett at agmarket.net now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago at the CME Group. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. And thanks, too, for being part of the upcoming All Day Ag Outlook. If you've not registered yet, willag.org. The cost is just $30 for Tuesday, the 7th day of March. And that includes your beef house meal in Covington, Indiana. Today, we have something to talk about because corn waned during the mid-morning, and it wasn't really, I mean, it's not huge, but it really wasn't very pretty. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, it really got beat up, especially on your front months, and so I think a couple of different things are going on. You know, the Outlook Forum came out, really no big surprises there, but, you know, I think when you start looking at things, it seems to me like there's going to be a bit of a shift in psychology somewhere in here. You know, you start talking about your new crop balance sheet, for instance, and it's going to be a little bit different story. Now, it's interesting to note that you see your front months down a lot more, for instance, 13, 14 cents than what your December corn contract was down around 7 cents. But I do think there's a shifting sentiment where people understand we have done a little bit of demand destruction. When we are in a situation where the balance sheet looks like it's going to switch from more of a tighter scenario to one in which we're really not all that tight at all.
Yeah, so the USDA numbers from this morning, this is really just a set of working numbers, but put acreage at 91 million for corn and 87.5 for soybeans. I don't think anybody was very far off of that. But you do get a chance to start filling those numbers in for what USDA will see in the prospective plantings report. That's a survey of farmers. And then again, in May, when those first supply and demand tables actually come out, you and many others have been of a mind that producers need to market new crop, and not just a little, quite a little bit of it. Do you still think that's the case?
Yeah, I think that if you get marketed up to, maybe even half your APH, there's a lot you can do to play it from the long side if you do get in a situation where you feel like you need that sort of security. So, you know, you can buy calls, you can do all kinds of things. But I guess my thought process is this: if a producer feels very unsure about what their profitability might look like with another 30, 40, 50 cents of downside, you know, you got to be careful to sit here and do nothing, because we have way less profit margin on the table right now than what we had a year ago today. And even though price structure is fairly similar, and the reason for that is that you're looking at a very expensive crop that we're putting in the ground based upon last fall's fertilizer prices and the timing of those fertilizer inputs, so the purchases. So bottom line is we have to at least protect ourselves just in case this thing doesn't roll over, because I think one of the worst things we could see happen is if we have a monster crop, you know, a great big 230, 250 type crop, and not be able to make money on it due to the fact that corn rolls over so substantially on a year whenever we know we've got a lot of money invested into the crop.
No, farmers are just thinking to themselves right about now, but $5.50, $5.60 cash corn at my elevator. That's somewhere between 30 and 40 under, I suppose. That's not where I wanted to start or where I wanted to continue my new crop sales. You're really convinced.
Yeah, I mean, I'm convinced that you have to have some stuff in place. The thing is that one thing we like to do, you know, if, let's say you've got some sales on the books already and you don't want to get super committed to actual physical sales, you can always step in here and buy yourself a put option right at the market. You know, maybe give yourself 70, 80 cents of downside protection, and then you may even put a ceiling on it. So right now, it doesn't sound so bad to sell $7 corn. Well, if you sold a $7 call, you know, you're going to get awfully good money at it. I mean, you just go out to, for instance, just to December, for instance, and a $7 call is still going for, oh, 14, 15, 16 cents. So, you know, if they're going to give me that to cheapen up the cost of my put option, I'm going to be gladly taking it, because if I get capped out on a handful of bushels, and I don't want to do this on, oh, maybe 20, 25% APH, but yeah, I wouldn't do any more than that. But if I've got crop insurance, I know darn good and well I've got insured bushels. A strategy like that works really well going hand in hand with crop insurance. And I think if you're buying the crop insurance, you better understand what the insured bushels mean, because it certainly can accentuate your marketing plan.
Yeah, the volatility index, by just as a reminder, is being set right now, the last five trading days of the month of February. That started yesterday. So probably good news is that December only moved 5 cents for the day, not the 15. We'll have to keep track of that. Anything from the soybean side of the ledger that you've been watching?
Well, you know, actually, soybeans kind of a boring day is compared to corn. I mean, it's pretty rare that you see corn down 13, 14 cents and beans down 6 or 7. It's just not really something that we see all that often. Whenever you look at, for instance, the March soybean chart, it actually looks pretty pretty much still entrenched in an upward trend. So, you know, I think whenever it gets right down to it, the story in South America on weather is old, but it's still there. You still haven't completely wrecked, for instance, the soybean meal market. In fact, soybean meal today, you know, it was down there for a while and then you settled up slightly. So, you know, you're still within $6-7 of $500 a ton. That's an awfully salty price. So, you know, ultimately when it gets right down to it, you know, I think that the soybean market looks stable for the time being. Now, we all know that beans can go down $1 a day. So I'd be very cautious as to make the assumption that, if you continue to see some weakness in some of the other grains, I don't think there's any question that you could see substantial weakness in soybeans as well.
I also know that you happen to keep pretty close track of the cattle market. The IPT, or the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale, took place today. They sold 49 bulls for $217,550. That averaged $4,439 a bull. Not too bad, I suppose.
No, that's not bad at all. And, you know, there's no doubt whenever you look at this cattle situation, BSE in Brazil, Brazilian exports of beef are going to be halted. It just adds even more fuel to the fire that we call this hot cattle market. So as we looked at things today, actually fats weren't up a whole lot, but then you looked over at feeders, you know, and feeders were up anywhere from, oh, $1.45 to $2 plus. And so, you know, I think that the enthusiasm to own cattle is going to be very strong. And keep in mind, yes, I know everyone's bullish. It makes you a little bit cautious. But this is, Todd, without a doubt, in my opinion, the most fundamentally bullish setup in cattle I've ever seen. And so 60-year lows in the cattle herd in the U.S. and cattle on feed are substantially lower. And this is at a time whenever it looks like our pastures in the Western Corn Belt are going to heal up. If these folks decide to start retaining heifers, you better watch out on what fat cattle prices are going to do.
Thank you much, and thank you for joining us on the upcoming All Day Ag Outlook.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be a part of it.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. You can, too, as well, over at the Beef House. The cost is just $30. Do not wait to register. Do it today at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now, up next, we'll continue the conversation we started yesterday with Roman Horobetz. He's a farmer in Ukraine. We've been talking to him since Russia invaded that nation a year ago. I spoke with him earlier this week. So the first time we talked, not long after the invasion last year, I recall it being about 9 o'clock at night, your time, and you, in the middle of the conversation, asked me if I could hear the air raid sirens going off, which bothered me a lot, but didn't seem to bother you very much. How has the war affected you for the year?
I got a lot of gray hair. No, I'm not joking, really. And a lot of my friends as well. Even though we were not on battlefields or, you know, we were not being involved in any fightings, but still, you know, a lot of this uncertainty, a lot of anxiety, and, you know, it's been a hard time, and it is still. So that's why what I started to, see clearly that some changes are happening. I don't know why, and I don't know how it works, but, you know, apparently we are getting more gray hair. and actually, because of all of these internal processes of being a little bit nervous every time, it also affects some immunity, because I don't get sick often. I mean, like once per several year I've got fever and cough, but during last year, probably three times. I don't think it's sort of virus or something like that, because, you know, we all are vaccinated, and but still, you know, it affects a lot your body, your mental conditions, and people are tired, of course, but we still have a lot of positive thoughts about outcome of this war, and we all still believe that we are going to be victorious. I don't like to use this word, because you know, it's not a competition. It's just a matter of survival. We rather be alive or not. That's our Ukrainian approach, because there is no other way of development of this story.
Let's talk a little bit about the last year. You and I believe it's your brother understood going into the winter of 2022 that war was coming. You told me that in the fall of 21, you expected this and laid in all the supplies that you needed to put a crop in the ground. We talked, and you managed to do that. We talked again, I believe, in August, and I think the crops were looking pretty good, but I have not asked you or talked to you since then about what the crop was like. Can you tell me how the fall went?
Oh, sure. So we had a very weird year last year, because it was like ups and upside down weather conditions. May was dry, but usually May is wet. June was like a desert dry, but June is not dry usually. And July was super wet. August was super wet. September, October, November. We finished harvesting our corn on 30th of December. But usually we finish harvesting around 10th or 15th of November. So we had like 1.5 months delay. And for corn, it was a good weather conditions, because Corn received excess amount of moisture. We didn't have many areas of nitrogen washout. So on average, we closed our corn roughly around 11 metric tons per hectare. You can do all of the conversions. I don't know how much is that in bushels per acre.
Fortunately for us, the U.S. Grains Council, USGC, has an app for just that. You can download it easily enough on your iPhone or, I suppose, Android as well. And the number is 175 bushels to the acre. Just as a reminder, this is a conversation I held earlier in the week with Roman Horobats. He is a farmer in Ukraine. Here's how his wheat crop did.
Usually we grow food wheat with 12.5% of protein. But this year, all of our wheat was feed wheat with a lot of fungus and stuff like that. So poor grade of wheat. And also yield was very low, at least 25% lower than usual. Soybeans are okay. Sunflower, okay. I mean, soybeans a little bit better than usual. So overall, I would say last year was quite good.
Did you have an issue marketing or shipping?
No. We have some hog producers nearby, and we managed to sign a forward contract with them. So we were not thinking about all of the logistical issues that might appear during the fall and winter season. So we sold all of our, almost all of our corn to these guys. So we are able to negotiate price. For example, I have 500 metric tons of corn left.
That's about 20,000 bushels.
And I need some money. And I just write these guys, like, guys, this is my plan. And in like 5, 7, 10 days, I'm willing to receive payment for this corn. And they are okay. So with contracts, okay. Of course, Ukraine overall as a country, Ukraine has a lot of corn on hands. Also, many people have a lot of corn from previous year, from 2021, and they are still selling it. And of course, our ports and Western logistical hubs, they are not able to export all of that corn in the same pace as we have before war. You know, this factor pushes prices down. And it will be pushing prices down because, you know, Ukraine harvested something like 28 million tons of corn this year. And we exported something like 12 or 15, I don't quite remember. So we have a lot of corn in stocks.
Well, that's at the moment, but the marketing year is not over, and USDA says 22.5 million ton, or about 886 million bushels, will be exported from Ukraine of a total production of just over a billion bushels. We'll hear more tomorrow on the Closing Market Report from Roman Horobats. He is a farmer that we've been talking to for the last year since Russia invaded Ukraine. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Let's check in now with Mike Tenuri. He is at T-Storm Weather, tstorm.net online. Thank you, Mike, for being with us today. Let's get started here in the United States. A lot of snowfall in the upper Midwest, some terribly cold temperatures from time to time. And I'm thinking that maybe you can tell us a little bit about how this storm tracks, what impacts it has in the United States now, and maybe what impacts in a few weeks.
Well, for agriculture, the biggest story from that system will be all of the water that it put down. Not only did it produce a swath of heavy snow across South Dakota and Minnesota, it also produced a lot of rain across the Corn Belt. We're going to see a lot more rain over the next couple of weeks. We have another strong system that moves through Sunday and Monday. There'll be another one a few days after that. And then there's at least one or two more that trail 1 to 2 weeks out. So we put all this together, Todd, and what we end up looking at is a lot of rain for the Corn Belt. And this is going to focus on Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, parts of Indiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin. So this area is going to see the rivers rise over the next couple of weeks, and it won't be very difficult to produce river and field flooding from the combination of the amount of water that's coming up, and then also because the ground is still a little bit frozen. It's still February, and it'll take a while for things to thaw out. The other piece of this story is that we've had a lot of snow across the Dakotas and Minnesota, and even into central and northern Wisconsin this winter. We saw more over the last 24 hours, and even though we aren't looking at another big snowstorm like we just saw, we are looking at opportunities for rain and some snow, and we're not looking for super mild temperatures in those areas. Because of that, that snowpack is going to linger for another week or two, and then it will start to melt. And just based on the depth and the volume of snow that exists, you can easily make an argument that even with one or two rain events in March, they're going to have wet conditions there throughout next month, and it won't be very challenging to push those out into April, which is now only about 5 weeks away. So that'll be something we'll start thinking about with time, but essentially we're going to be starting out this spring with wet conditions.
If you turn your attention from North America to South America, what do conditions look like?
Well, we're still dealing with the drought in Argentina. Even though we saw some rain this week, it's going to end up being the second driest of the last 38 years in the key growing region of Argentina. That drought is extending into southern Brazil, with Rio Grande do Sul still in need of rain, and their soybean harvesting will start up here over the next couple of weeks. So we do have some better rains for that region coming up in Rio Grande do Sul, but it's getting a little bit late. The central areas are now harvesting soybeans and planting corn, and it doesn't look too bad for that over the next 10 to 12 days because there won't be a ton of rain coming up. But as you extend further north into the region we call Matopiba, which includes about 10 to 12% of soybean production, they've had a great growing season until about 30 days ago. It stopped raining and hasn't been raining very much since, and there's not a ton of rain on the way over the next 10 days. So a fairly dry close in that region. And that's kind of the things that we're looking at across South America.
Thank you very much.
Yep, great being here.
Mike Tenor is with T-Storm Weather, online at tstorm.net. Don't forget to go online to willag.org right now to register for that all-day outlook. Great show coming up on Tuesday, the 7th day of March. It's really close, so don't wait. Register today, willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org, or on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.